Yes.
La la la
La la
la
la.
la 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 la. It says my internet connection is unstable. That's fun.
Like me, like my mental health.
Exactly.
Welcome to the Incoherent Fangirl.
Where we are back with a special double interview.
Double header.
Yay!
I'm Mandy Averse.
And I'm Karen from Massacre Manor. Welcome back to the podcast, friends. We are back from summer break.
Hello.
It is very confusing. Time is weird. I don't understand it, but it's fine.
It went by so fast.
Yes. Okay, first time in the second part of the season that I break Mandy's heart. I don't know. It
Oh,
is in our
where can
timeline,
I?
it is August 7th as well as August 8th. And in y'all's timeline, it is
Hey,
August 15th.
I forgot about that. You're
Yeah.
right. We're gonna do some magic later. You're gonna see our clothes
Magic. It's
change,
gonna be very
everything.
fun.
Yeah.
That sound means we have an intruder
I
alert.
am so
I'm
excited.
so excited. Y'all, we have Lyndall Clipstone, author of Tenderly I Am Devoured, among other
This
things.
cover.
I'm
This
obsessed with
cover.
this. It's so pretty.
Ah,
Welcome to the
lovely.
podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here chatting with you.
So excited. So first thing we always ask is, can you give us like the elevator pitch of the book for anybody who hasn't heard of it?
Sure. So, Tenderly I Am Devoured is a romantic folk horror about a girl who agrees to marry the swan god worshipped by her isolated coastal hometown. But when her betrothal goes horribly wrong, she has to work with her arrogant rival and his alluring older sister to save herself from a fate worse than death.
Oh,
Like,
it's so good.
no notes. I have
Like, yeah,
no notes.
it's
I'm
just
so proud of my
I
pitch. I feel like I've honed it to like a fine art. I'm just like, yes, good.
it is
And like,
excellent.
you named it perfectly too, because I devoured this book. Like, I
Yes. I
really
love the
did.
title. It wasn't the original title. The original title was going to be We Quiver Before It, which was a secret history quote. And as much as I love that, it just didn't quite fit. And so we went back and forth with so many different ideas. And yeah, Tenderly I'm Devoured, just it's so perfect. I'm so glad that's where it ended up.
It's
It's
great.
great. And it like just rolls off the tongue. It's like so
Yes.
lyrical too. Like, I love it.
Yeah, I love it. And it looks so pretty on the cover as well. I'm such a fan of like
Yes.
big titles at the moment.
Yes.
So, how was the story born? Like, where did it come from? What made you want to write it? So, I this is my fourth book, which is wild for me. I still feel like I'm just a debut starting out, honestly. But my third book, which came out in 2023, was sort of one of those books where I really hoped it was going to be like the launching point of my career. And instead, it was an incredibly quiet release buried in the fall season between a whole lot of very enormous book talk viral books. And I had such creative burnout after that experience where I was just at this crossroads where I was thinking, did I want to continue trying to write? Did I want to continue with this career as an author? Because it was so stressful and anxiety inducing. And I was just really, really completely emptied out of all creativity and enthusiasm. But I went back to reading the sort of books that had been what inspired me to want to be a writer in the first place, and just thinking about what sort of stories really lit me up creatively, what sort of things did I want to work on, what stories did I want to tell. And I think I went back to works like Donna Tartt's The Secret History, which is one of my all-time favorite books, and I realized I wanted to work on something that was more intimate and small stakes and literary and experimental feeling, and move away from the fantasy heavy stories that I'd been working on before. And so that was the initial starting point for it. And once I got the idea for this book, it just really insisted on being written. It wouldn't let me go. So I'm really glad that it all worked out. It really just feels like the perfect kind of
evolution of my writing career. It's exactly the sort of story I wanted to tell, and I'm so proud of it. And it's such a personal story, and I love how different it feels, but still similar to all my other work.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
you have kind of, and in all of your writing, I think you have a kind of like, I don't know, like atmospheric niche where like all your stories, they're different, but they like fit into the same kind of atmosphere
Yeah, I think so too.
yeah, and I think it is a little bit of a departure from your other stuff because there's less like big grand fantasy things in it, right?
Yeah.
What was that kind of like writing, stepping back away from the fantasy and diving into something that's a little bit more contemporary, even though there are still some fantastical elements to it?
I really, really enjoyed it. It felt much closer to the sort of thing that I wanted to be working on at this stage in my career. I absolutely loved writing the gothic fantasy of the Lake's Edge duology, and I loved writing the sort of dark eldritch horror fantasy of Unholy Terrors. But I just felt like with the rise of the romanticy genre, my work was struggling to stand out because when it was a fantasy book, it was very different from a lot of the types of other romantic fantasies that were out there. And I think I was feeling like I was struggling for it to stand out. And also, I was worried that readers would be coming into it with an expectation of it being something it wasn't, because my writing does have a very distinctive kind of vibey literary style, prose heavy, that's quite different to a lot of fantasy books. And it really just felt quite freeing to move into this space where it could be more small stakes and literary feeling. And even though it's a second world, I really liked how it felt very familiar to our real world. It was so much fun writing a book where they had cars and record players and things like that. But yeah, I absolutely loved it. And I think that was one of my favorite things on working on a book, where it just felt a lot closer to real reality while still having these really fun supernatural elements.
Kind of in that same vein, part of this story takes place in or like about the chthonic realm or with ch these chthonic gods. Did you do any research into like the underworld or did you like bring pieces of that mythology into your story and then like tweak it? Like what was that
It's
part like?
very loosely inspired by classical mythology. So I would love to say that I have like a very rich classics education, but I think I'm mostly just like a girl who was completely obsessed with Persephone, as so many of us have been. And I played a lot of the video game Hades, and I really loved the setup of the classical god pantheon, how there's so many different deities all responsible for their own individual sort of slice of the other world. And I think because I'd written both of my previous books, there was the Lord Under in the Lake's Edge series, and then also Nick Severin, who was the Sanguine Saint, who was like the big bad in Unholy Terrors. They were both very omnipresent, all-powerful types of gods, and I really wanted to write a god that felt a bit less inhuman and strong and all powerful. And I love the idea of it being this kind of folkloric, local hedge god type thing, because then it brings up all these really interesting questions of how does such a small god get power when only a few people believe in them, and what do they need to continue to exist, and what are the limits of their power when they're not all present. So yeah, it was really fun. And I think I drew a little bit of inspiration on classical mythology for it, but obviously gave it my own kind of spin.
You did it expertly. Like you
I
said,
appreciate
with a small god who only this little town really believes in, but
that.
still giving him enough power that, of course, it's a god. But yeah, you brought him down to earth, but also kept him godlike.
It really suited the types of stories that I wanted to tell. It made it feel so microcosmic and intimate and small stakes, because he's this all-powerful god for an isolated town. not the whole entire world, but still
Right.
it's an important story for the characters who are all involved in it.
Right.
Yes.
Everything to that town.
Exactly. Yeah. I want to pivot a little bit to the relationships, like the romantic. There's a lot of romance happening in here, and it's I don't want to give too much away, but it is very like I feel like it's very unique to this book. I don't think we see a lot of how the romance kind of played out in this book in literature in general. What was that kind of like writing that? Because I feel like there's a lot of strings that kind of have to interconnect for that to play out well.
I really love the romance, and I just posted about it recently on my Instagram how it's been like really unexpected for me. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised by how divisive it's been for readers. Like every now and then
Really?
when I slip and look at my Goodreads reviews, it's sort of like 50-50 of people who love it, and all these people who are sort of like, oh, the romance was like, I hated it. I couldn't stand reading about it. And I'm just like, I don't know. I think that to me just emphasizes that I made the right choice by writing a romance that is challenging to people and different from what they're used to. And so it's a queer poly romance between the main character and two siblings. So obviously the siblings are not in a romance with each other.
No,
They're in a
they're not.
romance with the main character. And for some reason, the fact that she is able to love two people and two siblings really throws people. And I sort of feel like perhaps this is a sign that we need to see more diversity in relationships if
Yep, let's
something
evolve a little.
like a fictional character having a romance with fictional siblings and there not being any jealousy between them is something that completely throws people off. But at the same time, I've had people who are in real life polyamorous romances message me and say that they loved seeing it represented in a book. So that made me very happy. But the main driving force behind the romance was I wanted to reinforce the unconditionality of the love that Lark, the main character, deserves, because a big part of her character arc is that she has really messed up all of her plans for this very well thought out future. She was at this exclusive school. She was going to graduate top of her class. She was going to apply to this exclusive curatorship at the art gallery. She had it all planned out and she was sort of on track for everything to happen. And then she was betrayed and lost like everything basically in a way that she feels like is her fault. So she returns home in disgrace, having basically shattered her entire very carefully planned future back home, back to her brothers, back to her family that's also in kind of dire straits. And I think for anyone who's gone through an experience like that, especially at a teenagery age, it can really feel like the end of the world and it can be very easy to blame yourself for it. And I have spoke about it here and there, but a lot of it was inspired by my own experiences in academia, where I was sort of chose, but also left with little choice to drop out of a PhD program when I needed to take leave and wasn't able to be given it because someone close to me was very sick. And looking back in hindsight now, as a much older person, I'm like, that was absolutely irrational, like to go to the dean and say to them, I need to take time off for these reasons. And they basically said, if you can't complete, you have to drop out. And I felt like if only I'd worked harder, if only I'd done,
That wasn't your fault.
no. And so I really loved working through that experience with Lark, where a lot of it is she carries so much shame and this feeling of failure because of what she's been through. And I think her experiences through the book really give her back this level of empowerment and self-agency in general. And her relationship with Alistair and Camille really just emphasizes the way that everybody's deserving of love unconditionally, even if we mess up, even if we make bad choices. And I think for young people, like young adult readers, that's such a good message to have.
100%.
Absolutely. First of all, I'm sorry that happened to you. That wasn't fair, and that wasn't your fault. But it's funny that you brought that up because I literally, that's one of my questions. I don't want to give away spoilers, but Lark has this experience at school and it made me violent. Oh, I was so angry for her. How do you keep your sanity when you're writing scenes that you know are going to cause like an emotional reaction with your readers? And we're going to like, I was ready to just like,
I actually found it very healing to write. She sort of has two intertwined terrible experiences, which combine to make one very big misfortune. And part of that is her expulsion, and the other part is she goes through like a very messy, toxic friend breakup, which I think as a young queer woman, I definitely had experiences similar to her where you don't quite know how to pass out your feelings, and you have this weird, close, platonic, perhaps not entirely healthy relationship with someone else. And when you do have like a friend breakup, it definitely, it's such a dramatic and emotional experience, perhaps even more emotionally overwhelming than breaking up from a relationship that's romantic, because I think there's more language to understand how to feel about that, I think. Whereas when you have a friend breakup, it just, it's very weird. And I, like probably many other people, had gone through having a difficult friend breakup when I was in high school, and writing about Lark's experiences and the reader responses and how people were on her side about it. Because I think in a lot of those relationships, you often can feel quite gaslit. And again, like, oh, it's my fault. I did the wrong thing. I wasn't a good enough friend. So
If someone makes you feel
it,
not good enough, it's them, not you.
yeah. And writing about Lark and then having readers be like, oh, I'm so angry about what happened to her. I was just like, oh, it's so healing to write out this kind of experience and see people be sympathetic for her and understand the emotional roller coaster that she was going through. But at the same time,
And
I
to know
think,
that, no, you go ahead.
oh, I was going to say, I think as an author, it's always hard because you have to make your characters very uncomfortable to make the story good. And
True.
it makes me feel bad because I'm like, they only deserve good things and they get very little of them in this very stressful situation.
That's a good point. They have to go through it. I was just going to say it probably helps to know that people would feel that way about your the situation you were put into, and that like if you know readers would rally behind Lark, we would also rally behind you if we'd have been there and known it.
Yeah, and I hope that if there's been readers who have gone through something similar, that they feel similarly encouraged by seeing it play out on the page and how their own feelings about it might be.
And it could give someone who's going through something right now the confidence and the courage to say, no, this isn't how this is going to go.
As
That's
somebody
cool.
who just outside of my teen years had a very similar like friend breakup and felt like, because in the book, Lark loses everything. She loses all of her relationships. That was it. That was it for her. And that felt very like cathartic for me to read, because it was like, I feel like I went through that too. And so it's like, oh wait, I wasn't in the wrong, because I'm out here caping for Lark. And so my situation, I'm like, oh, so yeah, there are, I mean, there's at least this one reader who was like,
I
I
mean, it's
feel.
hard to say I'm glad, because I'm sorry that you went through such a horrible experience, but that was my hope behind writing that part of her character arc, was that people would have like a sense of
And
emotional comfort or feeling seen.
especially for young adult readers, because
I
everything's
think so too.
so
I mean, I
everything's
don't want
high stakes.
everything. I don't like the idea of writing a book for it purely to be a message, but I do think about how reading played an important role in my life when I was a young adult and what I drew from books. And I think I'm always thinking of my teen self and what other teen readers might be taking from a young adult book when I'm working on one. So Yeah,
Okay, so
very
we don't want to
nice.
keep you too long, but we do have a couple of questions that we always ask, and they're just kind of little fun ones.
Sure.
So we have a segment on the podcast that we call Fictional Boyfriend of the Week. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a boyfriend. It's we just kind of pick a fictional character that we really vibed with that week. So I've had a fictional granny, we've had fictional pets. So it's really just any fictional character that you really like feel strongly about. Do you have any characters that you're like, yes, this everybody needs to know this person?
And it doesn't have to be someone you wrote. It
And
could
it can
any mini
be any
media,
media.
TV, video game, books.
Oh yeah. Let me try and think because I've been reading a lot of advanced books lately, and I don't want to like pick one that nobody's read. But
This is always where like every media you've
everything,
ever
yeah.
consumed
It's like,
leaves your
oh,
brain.
I know, right? Hang on, let me just look up the title so I can make sure that I have it correctly.
Sure.
Okay, so I am going to cheat a bit and use like a book that isn't out until next year, but I
It's okay.
recently read an arc of an adult, I suppose you would call it like a folkloric horror called Honeysuckle by Bar Friedman Tell. And it's the story of a boy whose older sister makes him a bloodwed, which is like a girl out of flowers, which I think
Ooh.
is loosely based on Welsh mythology, when he's a child to be his playmate. And as they grow up together and they become adults, his feelings for her change. And it's got all of these really wonderful and deeply uncomfortable questions about the nature of consent and relationships and freedom and all of these sorts of things. And the flower girl in it is called Day. And she is just one of my absolute favorite characters. Like, I felt so emotional reading her beautiful arc. Like, I was so like tearful at the end, this beautiful bittersweet journey that she goes on. So yeah, like she's a character that I'm definitely thinking a lot about since I just read this book. It was really, really beautiful. I'm very excited for it to come out next year and for everybody to get to read it and
We'll have
share in
to
that.
add it. Yeah, I'm
Yeah.
excited. That
It's
sounds
got a
good.
beautiful cover as well. It's these sort of like flowers with like an arm coming out of them. And yeah.
Oh, love it.
okay, we would normally ask what you're reading, but you've just told us. So I want to add a fun question. Your author bio mentions that you live in a 100-year-old cottage, and I need to know everything. Like, tell
Everybody
me
has
about
to
your
know if it's
cottage.
haunted, and sadly, it is not, as far as I can tell. Yeah, we live, so the area I live in is one of like the older sort of suburbs. It used to be like an old dock workers sort of area, and our house was built in 1910, I think, and had been in the same family for a few generations. I think it was like the person we bought it from, it had been in her husband's family for a few generations before we moved in. So,
That's so
yeah,
special.
vibey old house. We have open fireplaces. When we dig in the garden, we found like old like glass jars and horseshoes and all sorts of interesting things.
So cool.
That is
Yeah, we had someone come to do like some work on the house, and he was like, "Oh, I used to deliver papers here when I was a kid," and it's just, yeah, it's very cool.
Oh, that is
That
very
is, it sounds
cool.
magical. It sounds like a magical place for sure. I
It's
had to throw that one in.
I mean, it's got all the old house kind of things about, you know, it's drafty, it's freezing in winter, none of the floors are 90-degree angles to the walls or anything, but it's like we love it a lot. It's been a really lovely place to live.
Love
I
that.
love that.
Okay, one final question. What comes next? Like after Tenderly, do you have something in the works? Is there anything you can tell us about?
So I am currently working on what I hope will be my adult debut. It's a literary leaning sapphic horror, and I am absolutely dying to be able to share more about it. So hopefully one day soon I'll be able to introduce that to the world. But I can say it's been a very, very fun and challenging in the best way kind of experience to be working on this book. I think it's making me grow and learn so many new things as an author. And yeah, I'm super excited for what comes next.
Yay, I'm excited.
Oh, it's been so fun to work on. I'm loving it so much. I'm so absolutely terrified about going on submission, hoping that an editor will love it as much as I do.
Oh my
Yeah,
gosh,
I'm
I'm
sure
sure
they
they
will.
will. That sounds amazing.
But yeah, I'm really thrilled to be in my adult author year. I think it's going to be really great fun to after
I'm
working on YA
excited.
for
Oh,
them.
I'm so
Yeah. So
excited.
different.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's going to be amazing.
That's
And
so
this is
exciting.
when we give you a little bit of bad news. Now that you have been on the podcast, you're actually legally obligated to come back for all future book releases. Sorry, not sorry.
I can come back and then I'll actually be able to tell everybody about my secret adult project.
Can't
Yes.
wait. Yay! Thank you so much for being here. This has been so much fun. Tenderly, I Am Devoured is out now, so everybody go to your local bookstore and pick up
Look
a
at this
copy.
cover.
It's so pretty.
Yay.
It's just
Gorgeous.
like I just want to give it a hug.
I know.
It is so pretty. I feel
It's
so lucky to have such a
beautiful.
gorgeous cover.
It's amazing. Thank you so much, Lyndall, for being here. We had the best
Thank you for having
time.
me. This has
We
been
will
wonderful.
hopefully talk to you soon. Yay.
Yeah. All
Yeah.
right. Bye.
Bye. Oh my God.
She's the most precious gem.
I love
I'm
her.
jealous of her house.
I
I
love
want her
her.
house. I love
Yeah.
her.
That was so much fun.
Strange that it's winter for her right now.
Yeah, I'm
And
literally sitting here sweating.
it's 9, it was 9 a.m. for her, 7 for me,
Four for me.
4 for you. I was trying to math.
It's okay. I looked at the clock so that I didn't have
Yeah.
to math.
And now?
Hey guys. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we had two scheduled interviews for this week. Obviously, you can see that I am alone. Due to some unforeseen life circumstances that came up for all parties involved, we had to reschedule that interview. And that's also why I'm recording this outro solo. We had intended to record the outro with our second interview. Obviously, since that's not happening, I'm just recording it solo so that we can add it into the end of this episode so it wasn't like a harsh cutoff. Next week, we will be chatting with our bestie, Rebecca Fabian, who is coming back to the podcast to talk about her sophomore solo novel, The Sun and the Moon, which is a follow-up to The Lovers. They're in the same world. As well as our previously scheduled second interview, our other bestie, Hannah Nicole Mayer, we're going to talk about the third installment to her best-selling series, Accomplice to the Villain. So stay tuned for those because I'm sure it's going to be super fun and super chaotic, as it always is with us. As a side note, we have also run into some hiccups with our current podcast platform, or the platform that hosts all of our podcast episodes. And we're currently looking to switch to another platform. So there may or may not be some growing pains as we work through all of that. We are hoping that there won't be anything that's too noticeable, at least on y'all's end. We just wanted to let you know that that is happening just in case something comes up. We love y'all so much. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye. We are sponsored by our friends at Here Comes the Nerd. Pins, stickers, magnets, and more. Here Comes the Nerd has happy art for all fandom-loving hearts. New customers can use coupon code FANGIRL during checkout for 20% off their first order at herecomesthenerd.com. Coupon applies to ready-to-ship items only.